You're listening to the weekly teaching podcast of Willamette Christian Church in Westland, Oregon. We hope that what you hear today inspires you to laugh, question, think, and grow. If you'd like to connect with us even further, hit us up online at willamette.cc or shoot us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this week's episode.
My name is Kevin, and I am now the lead pastor. I've been on staff for all of a couple months, and I know some of you have wondered, do you actually really have a family? Because I keep saying I've got a family, and I'm going to bring them up here. I do, and they are here, sitting over here on the second row. I finally got my crew up here with me. I am so thrilled. As well, the especially beautiful and amazing female vocalist that was singing today, that is my oldest daughter. Yeah, she's great. I have no idea where she gets her music talent from, because it is not from me at all. But we just enjoy that she's got that. Hey, so we're in this series you see called Over It that we kicked off last week. What to do when you are just over it, how to get over the things trying to get over on you. And so today we're talking about the idea of fear, right? And all of us have fears. In fact, I hope that you appreciate the irony that I will be talking about fear while doing one of the things that the majority of people fear doing the most, which is public speaking, right? Like standing up here in front of people and, you know, making an idiot or humiliating yourself. That's scary for you and for me, right? So I get that. We all know what it's like to experience fear. As well, I would say that as a culture, we have this strange obsession with fear, right? Like how many of you like fear and like being made to be afraid? Like how many of you like going to haunted houses? Any haunted house people? Watching scary movies, right? Some of you like this. You will stand in line and you will pay money to have other people scare you and give you a near heart attack, right? Like I don't get that. I do not comprehend. I don't like either one of them, okay? Because they freak me out. But did you know this? So for those of you haunted house fans, right? I'll give you a bucket list. There's a haunted house in Niagara Falls called Nightmares Fear Factory, okay? Anyone been to the Nightmares Fear Factory? All right, you can make this, if you like these things, you can jot this down. When you go, they have a moment there, the scariest moment of the experience in the haunted house. They snap your picture, right? Kind of like on the roller coaster, right, where it's a really crazy moment. They take your picture and then they post it online on their website for the world to see. So just know when you go and you freak out and your face is uncontrollable, they're gonna get a picture of it and put it online. And I wanna show you a few examples of what you could look like if you go. Do you love that? I'm not sure he could get his eyes any wider if he tried. That is terror, right? Like he is genuinely scared. If it makes you jump, that's a good scare. The boy band pick. He almost picked his nose, in fact. That was crazy. And then here, okay. This is my favorite because he's trying to leave her, right? He's running without her. And she's got his shirt like, no, you will not. We will go down together. So hey, if that's your thing, man, you could make the list at the Nightmares Fear Factory. But listen, that might be what some of us look like on the inside of different things that come at us, different issues that try to get over us in life. And if we're not careful, those things can become crippling. Right? So I was actually on a flight about a year ago now, flying Spirit Air. I will not comment on Spirit Air because maybe someone works for them, except to say there's a really small window that if you work it just right, it can be advantageous. So flying Spirit Air, and I get in my seat and get situated, and they load the plane, and then they go through the pre-flight instructions, and then we start to back out from the terminal and start heading down the runway. And we get just a little ways, and then we stop. And we sit for like 20, 25 minutes. And like we're not waiting for other planes to take off. We're just stuck there. And so I'm sitting in an exit row, or right in front of an exit row. And so there's a flight attendant standing right behind me in the little space there. And I hear her get onto her phone, her personal phone, calling a friend. And she says, I hear her say this, "We've got a hurler," all right? And at first I thought that I misunderstood what she said. I thought, did you say we've got a hurdler? Like, are we on our way to a track and field meet? Like, what do we have here? And then I realized, no, I did understand her correctly, she said we got a hurler, that some guy, right? Turns out, just a big dude, like a bear of a man. But he's never flown before. So whenever we started backing out from the terminal, started heading down the runway, he went full on panic, right? And he started to puke and hurl in his seat, right? And then he squeezed past the other guys he was seated beside and makes his way down the aisle puking, right? Like the entire way, gets to the bathroom, locks himself, right? In that little bathroom, big dude locks himself in, panicked, completely panicked, and he can't get it together, right? So we sit there for several more minutes. Finally, the pilot comes on and says, hey, we're going to have to go back in, right? Like, this guy is not going to make it. We've got to take him back to the terminal, and then we're going to refuel and all that. So we go back to the terminal, get back connected there, and then we sit for like another 10, 15 minutes just trying to get him out of the bathroom, right? Like, he's not even come out of the bathroom yet. And then finally, he does, and he has to do the walk of shame, right? Because he's in the back, man. So he's got to walk past all of us, just a mess. It was rough. And I felt so bad for him, right? Because he was this really just big dude, but he could hardly make it off the plane. So terrible thing. Then they get him off. And then, of course, the cleanup crew comes in, and they look like the hazmat dudes off of Monsters, Inc., right? They got the right, cleanup on, right? They're just going to get the mask on. Hey, cleanup on aisle 25 through 37 and the bathroom. And the flight attendant station. So like, I did not take food or drink on that flight. I just passed. I don't want to touch it. So then they get it all cleaned up. It takes several more minutes. They top off the fuel again before we go. And like literally 2 hours later, we're finally ready for takeoff, right? Without Mr. Pukes-a-lot, right? Because that dude let fear control him and his journey, right? Like, I guess he could take a road trip, but this, here's why I tell you that story. This is what fear wants to do in your life and my life. It wants to control you and I, and it wants to keep us from experiencing life to the full, right? And I would encourage you, just take a moment, right? Just some self-introspection and reflection, and think about those things that fear has kept you from, right? A dream that you wanted to pursue, an idea that you had, a great idea that you had and wanted to try, or a relationship or a job or some other venture or some place that you were interested in, but fear kept you from trying, right? It kept you from something. Now let me be clear and be fair. There are times when fear is helpful or beneficial, right? Like when it alerts you to risk or to danger. Maybe you're walking late at night in some unfamiliar place and you start to turn down a dark alley and you feel like this may be a bad idea. That is fear working on your behalf to stay away from that and putting yourself in a bad spot. But fear also has the potential to limit our ability to experience life. Right. Maybe you're in the room and you have felt controlled or smothered or micromanaged by someone, a boss, a spouse, a parent, someone that let fear drive them and therefore drive you. Right. Or maybe you wanted to get close to someone and you really couldn't because they have become withdrawn. Right. And because they tend to isolate themselves because of fear in their life. Well, what are the things that, you know, you've missed out on or you regret doing because of this thing inside you that was motivated by fear? And so maybe our hope is that maybe you're here today and you've had that season and you're listening to this and you would say, I am over it, right? I'm sick and tired of letting fear control me and keep me from things or cause me to treat people in ways that I wish I wouldn't. Where today may would be the line or the day you would draw the line in the sand and say, enough already, right? Seriously. Or you would wake up and ask, hey, what are the things that I'm afraid of that are controlling me and how do I begin to get over and past some of those things? So that's what we're going to talk about today, how to live a life that is a bit more fearless, at least in relation to some of those things. So where we're going to head to, our strategy and our approach that we'll talk about, it's found in the text. That's our key theme for this series, which imagine that, the psalm that the band just wrote a song from, Psalm 23, right? And Grant Hickman, our teaching pastor, did a fantastic job kicking it off last week, talking about the first three verses, the Lord is my shepherd, talking about busyness and rest and Sabbath. And if you missed that, I would highly encourage you, go online and pick up the first week. It will be very beneficial to you. As well, if you want to go online, we created a resource for maybe you need to slow down and you would like some help with kind of how to maybe kickstart your prayer life. You can go to willamott.cc/overit. We've got a great resource there to encourage you, to maybe help you put some of those things Grant talked about into practice. But today, we're moving on to verse number 4. Verse 4 is also a fairly well-known verse. Like, even if you didn't grow up in the church, or you're new to church and the whole Jesus thing, or you've just never read the Bible in the Psalm, you have likely still heard this verse in the culture. And so let me read that with us and see if it may sound familiar. Here's what we read. As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. In fact, I don't feel like I'm doing it justice. So let me help maybe jog your memory a little bit more here. Here you go.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left.
There's a reason I don't do worship. Remember the rest of it? Because I've been laughing and blasting for so long. Anyone? You gonna leave me hanging? Even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. Okay. Hey, if you're new to church, that's Coolio and not David. Just so we're clear. Very different guys. But come on, Dangerous Minds. That was a great show. He does start off quoting David in that very first part of it. Let's go. And I don't even, like, I feel like I should pray for myself right now. Sweet Jesus. Verse 4 from the actual psalm. Here's what David wrote. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Right? In the NLT, it says, you are close beside me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The Bible Knowledge Commentaries, I read different commentaries, makes this statement about that verse. David was comforted by the Lord's presence and his protection. Right? So hear me. I'm going to give you the punchline right up front. That's how we're going to get over it today, right? We're going to choose presence, God's presence and his protection over our fear. In fact, we read this from the writer of Hebrews in Hebrews 13:5. He writes, for God has said, I will never fail you. I will never abandon you. So we can say with confidence, the Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? And understand, God's word, right, it's filled with all these promises he has made to you and I. And one way and one promise we grab a hold of to get over our fear is God's promise of presence and protection, right? And then we tell ourselves, I will not fear, right? I will not fear. God is with me. So this is what I want us to talk about today, right? I want to talk about this idea of presence. And then I'm going to press into it even more next week. This idea of presence in the middle of these deep, dark valleys that we face. Because reality is, we all wrestle. Everybody in here, at some level, you wrestle with different types of fear. Maybe it's a big fear, right? Maybe it is a really big thing. It is, you got the bad news from the doctor, or lost the job, or the spouse walked out, or economy, or what, it's real. Some of them are small, but they're still real, right? Even if it's small. Maybe it's quirky, right? Maybe it's peculiar. Any germaphobes, right? Some of you are germaphobes. Fear of clowns. Any of you freaked out by clowns? That's legit, actually. Clowns are always creepy. I don't care how you paint them. They're always weird, man. We have fear of the future, right? Things you can't control, right? You just can't. Or what might happen to your kids. We have fears that relates to family dynamics, right? Maybe hereditary dynamics, addiction issues that maybe are part of your family. Oftentimes we fear the unknown. Like I don't know. It freaks me out because I can't control that as well. Fear of failure, right? I don't want to blow it. Even fear of success. If I nail this, then what will people expect? You know, the business venture, starting over, starting something new, the challenge that you have coming up. And all of these things, they can potentially become these valleys, right? These deep, dark valleys that paralyze us. Like the guy on the plane, we become paralyzed again if we're not careful. But what I love about David, right, here in the psalm is David says, I am walking through a dark valley, right? Not maybe if I do someday, or, you know, potentially it could happen. No, I am in it, but I'm not freaking out, right? And I'm not going to let fear control me because God is with me, which is, by the way, awesome. And here's what I want us to do now, right? I want to show you a concrete, tangible picture image of what that looks like. So sometimes we would call these valleys that we go through, these deep, dark seasons, the storms of our lives, right? So what I want to do now is look at a powerful picture of Jesus, right? Jesus in the Bible, in a boat, in the middle of a storm, right? Curled up with his blankie and pillow, taking a nap, right? And then what I'll do is give you some takeaways and some encouragement about this God who's with us in the valleys and in the scary things to help us choose presence and his power and his protection, his freedom and confidence over those things that try to control us and over those fear. So now we're going to jump into Mark chapter 4. If you want to follow along, we're going to head there to look at this picture. In fact, this is such a vivid image, right? It made such an impact on Jesus' disciples that three of the four gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, guys writing about Jesus' life, recall this story in their account. So here's what we read in Mark's account, Mark chapter 4, verse 35. As evening came, Jesus said to the disciples, "Let's cross to the other side of the lake." So it's Jesus putting them in the boat to get in the water. So they took Jesus in the boat and started out, leaving the crowds behind. And then Mark puts a little parenthetical, although other boats followed. Verse 37, but soon a fierce storm came up. High waves were breaking into the boat and it began to fill with water. Jesus was sleeping in the back of the boat with his head on a cushion. The disciples, they woke him shouting, "Teacher, don't you care that we are going to drown?" In the Message version of that, it says, "Is it nothing to you that we're about to drown here?" Then in verse 39, when, and I highlight there, when Jesus woke up. So like maybe it took him a moment to wake up out of this deep sleep that he's in. When Jesus woke, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Silence, be still." In the Message version, it says he told the wind and waves, "Pipe down," right? Next, suddenly. Okay, so suddenly, so picture immediately. This isn't a gradual calming down. This isn't slowly the waves decreasing and going out. This is boom, right? Like immediately, smooth as glass. So suddenly, we read the wind stopped and there was a, watch, great calm. So from great storm to a great calm. How many of you know that sometimes when you go through really hard seasons and dark valleys, that you come to a place of greater calm after? Like that's not even part of the message, just, but that'll preach. And someday we'll hit that. But verse 40, then he asked them, "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" The disciples were absolutely terrified. Some versions say amazed. They marveled. They were in awe. "Who is this man?" they asked each other. "Even the wind and the waves obey him." Okay, now a lot of times, and if you've been around church for some time, pastors will take this sermon and they will leapfrog, right, from this text here about Jesus to these really lofty, huge promises about how Jesus will calm the storms in your life, right? What storm are you going through? What storm is it you're facing? Divorce, cancer, bankruptcy, health issue, boss is a jerk, school is hard, you're not getting enough likes on social media, right? Like, whatever. Put Jesus in your boat and he will calm that storm, right? You just tell that addiction, you tell that fear, you tell that bad news. Sit down and be quiet. Jesus is in my boat, right? Which by the way, that sounds awesome, right? Like it will preach and I feel like preaching it now. Here's the deal though, right? It's not the point of the story. It's not the thrust of this story. The point is way deeper, and it is so much richer, right? Because the disciples ask back in verse 41, who is this man, right? Right? Who is this guy? Even the wind and the waves obey him. And keep in mind, these are good Jewish boys. So they know God's word, right? They have studied, they know the scripture, and that God himself, right? Lord of lords and King of kings, that he directs, God directs the wind and the waves. In fact, the psalmist wrote about that in Psalm 89:9. You, and he's speaking of God in that psalm, you rule the raging of the sea. When its waves rise, you still them. So the disciples marvel here, right? They're amazed, terrified, because they now realize that the man in the boat is no ordinary man, right? That they have got God himself in the person and presence of Jesus in the boat. Right? And Jesus does not fear the creation that he created, right? So we're clear. Okay, but the reason that I bring you and I to this story is because this, the point of the story is not that all the storms in your life are going to end, right? That's not. The point is that Jesus is God. And Jesus tells us in Matthew 28, surely I am with you, right? I'm with you always, even to the very end of the age. So he's in the boat, he's God, and he's with us. But however, this especially awesome bit of information is not what they realize early on in the boat, not what they're focusing on, right? Basically, they are just bailing water, man, right? They're bailing water and just rowing frantically for their lives. Probably looking back, right, and getting irritated every time they look back and they see their leader asleep in the back of the boat. Like, for real? Seriously? Because, right, he's the guy that got them in this mess. Like the least thing he can do is acknowledge that they are sinking here, right? But he doesn't seem to care, right? He doesn't seem worried, which I wonder, like how many irritated looks they gave him, right? Giving him the stink eye, like, whatever, before someone finally goes back to wake him up. But we all feel this way at times, right? All of us have felt this way at moments. Do you even care, God? Like, how am I supposed to raise 3 kids, 4 kids by myself? Right? How is someone my age supposed to start all over? How do I find a new career? My spouse has Alzheimer's, and like every time that I walk into the room, I have to reintroduce myself to her. The storm is building, right? The valley is dark. Do you even care, God? And here's what I think with the disciples. I think that they probably, I think they expect Jesus to jump up and freak out, right? To panic a little bit, grab an oar and start to row, start to paddle, right? That's what they're expecting. Panic and paddle. Like, oh my gosh, you guys were right. This is so serious. This is terrible. Oh my goodness, we got to fix it now. Oh, this is bad. Okay, interestingly enough, there is so many experiences and emotions and feelings that you and I have that Jesus can identify with, right? He fully can. Sorrow. We see that. Joy, love, pain, anguish, anger, even temptation, right? We're told that Jesus was tempted, but he cannot identify with us in panic. Jesus never panics. I get the anguish, but not panic. But sometimes it does feel like God's asleep, right? And here they're overwhelmed and they are exhausted and they are freaking out. And finally, somebody goes back to wake Jesus up. And we read back in verse 38 where they wake him and say, teacher, listen again, don't you care that we're going to drown, right? The storm, the valley, it's getting over me. It's getting too much. It's overwhelming me. And then Mark told us in verse 39, when, right? I just love the attention here. When Jesus woke, like, you know, he had to wipe the sleep out of his eyes and he yawned a little bit. When he woke up, he said to the storm, wind, right? Waves, Stop it, right? Knock it off and be quiet. Kind of like you do whenever you want to take a nap, right? And your kids are being especially rowdy. You're like, hey guys, keep it down. And it does, right? Like it listens. And then Jesus, after that, he addresses the disciples, talks to them for a moment. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe goes back to finish his nap, right? It doesn't tell us. But like he doesn't even stretch out or warm up. Just like knock it off and poof. Complete silence. And the disciples' jaws hit the floor, right? They marvel. They're in awe because they know, right? Like they know Jesus is a miracle worker, right? They've seen the miracles. They've seen the healing. But now he's putting Mother Nature in timeout, right? That's different. And I think it's really easy to marvel and be in awe of God after the storm. The point of this story, I would argue, is that we should be in awe of him during the storm. And finally, the disciples come to this place of awe, right, and wonder. And they say this. They ask the question, who is this man, right? Who is it that even the wind and the waves obey him? They should have looked at Jesus in the boat snoring to the glory of God and asked, who is this man that even the wind and the waves cannot wake him, right? Like he doesn't bring a life jacket to the storm. He brings a pillow. That's awesome, right? And the disciples are now in awe. They marvel at who's in the boat. And this word marvel, wonder, awe, here's what it means. It means this feeling of reverential respect mixed with fear and wonder, right? So it's reverence and it's admiration produced by something powerful, okay? Reverence, admiration, and even a bit of fear produced by something powerful. And here's what storms and the dark valleys seek to do. They want to steal your awe, right? They want to steal your wonder, cause you to fear them rather than put your faith in the one that is fearless in the storm, right? So the dark valleys and the storms, they attempt to convince us. They want to convince you and I of their power, which is easy to do, is it not? Because you can see them, right? Because they're right in front of you. Whatever that thing is you're going through, you can hear the storm, you can feel the darkness of the valley in the season. So that all of your senses and everything around you're going, hey man, hey, you're going down, right? Like you're not gonna make it. You're not gonna overcome this. What are you gonna do now? And I'm not saying that we should ever be naive or ignore the reality or the gravity of a serious or a painful or a very discouraging situation. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying we should also never lose sight of the greater reality that Jesus is with us, right? As I walk through the darkest valley, I will not fear, for you are with me. And listen, Jesus is unfazed by the circumstances that rock our world. I heard a guy say one time, I love the way he put this, God rules the universe with his feet up, right? He's in the control center, feet up. Meaning like he doesn't sit on his throne, you know, just on the edge of his throne, biting his nails. Like, oh no, he's not pacing back and forth going, angels, it's fourth quarter. We're down 17. This is terrible, right? Like he's never had that moment. I'm not saying that his heart doesn't break for the painful circumstance you go through. The Psalms tell us that he captures all of your tears in a bottle. I'm just saying he's never been uncertain for one moment about the final outcome. And here are the disciples, I think they're frustrated that Jesus doesn't jump up and freak out and panic and worry with them, right? Because that's what they ask. They ask, don't you care, right? Like you seem way too calm right now in this moment. And when you have awe in Jesus, right? Whenever you don't fear the storm because you know he's with you, sometimes, for sure, in your life, you might come under the same criticism. You totally could. Where you have a parent or a relative or a friend or neighbor going, why are you not more bothered, right? I mean, what about the news you just got from the doctor, right? Did you not see that the market is drying up? Do you not see the political climate? Do you not, whatever, your health, the job, the kids? Do you not see the potential for danger or death? Why don't you care more? And by care, they mean, why don't you freak out and panic and worry and complain more? Right? That's what they, here's what they assume. That if you're not rowing frantically, right? Oh, and making all kinds of noise and clamoring and letting the thing get over you, well, then you're indifferent or you're naive or you're just foolish. And God totally disagrees. Right? Jesus tells us in Matthew's gospel, in Matthew 6, can all of your worries, right? All of them add a single moment to your life? Which, by the way, if you're new, that's a rhetorical question. Like, Jesus isn't waiting for you to come up and go, I think I found one that maybe will. The answer is no, is the answer. Right? So, like if you're short and you worry all day about being short, and then you go up to the wall and you get the ruler and you stand as straight as you can and you measure, you will not have grown 6 inches, right? If you are balding, right, and you lock yourself in your room, I'm going to focus on worrying about that all day long. Worry, worry, worry. And then you go look in the mirror. You're not going to have grown hair, right? So we know. If you worry about the business, if you worry about the bills, if you worry about the kids, if you worry about the country, worry is useless. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be wise and ask for help or get a strategy or a plan. That's smart. I'm just saying worry is useless. It zaps our strength, right? It robs our focus on what matters, the good things. And we can become paralyzed by the storms rather than awestruck by the one who silences them with a word. So some of you that have been here for a while, you know that just back in October, we lost my dad. Just suddenly got brain tumors and went in for surgery and then had complications after. And it just caught us off guard because his entire life, he laid carpet up till he was 70, right? I mean, till just a few months before. Super healthy, super strong, great. So just threw us all off. In fact, a week after the surgery, while he was still in recovery, I was living in Dallas, if you're new. Drove up from Dallas to Oklahoma City area where they're at. I preached on a Sunday, drove up so that I could stay with him for the night and give my mom some break and relief, and got there kind of late afternoon, evening. Finally, my mom went home, and so they had just given Dad some medicine to help him with the pain, and I thought he was sleeping because he laid down, and he was just breathing really deep. So I thought, okay, I'm going to run down to the cafeteria and grab a snack and just get back up here and be ready to sit with him through the night. Well, I'm gone for a couple minutes, man, and I come back up, and I'm walking into ICU, and I hear him yelling. He's going, Kevin! I'm like, oh, no. So I walk into the room, and, like, he slid down, like, halfway off of his bed. And I'm like, what are you doing? I have to get, like, the orderly, and we have to get him back up. And I said, what were you thinking? And he's like, well, I had to go to the bathroom, so I just got up to go. I'm like, you just had major brain surgery. You can't get up and walk. And he's like, I know that now. And I'm like, okay. Well, I said, okay, well, just don't tell mom, right? Because you and I will both be in trouble if you do that. So we got to keep that between us. Well, on the first night when he had surgery, I had sat with him through that night. And so a few days later, he had told my wife, Molly, and my mom, he said, hey, like in the middle of the night, we sit down, Kevin and I sit down on the floor, and this cool breeze came over us, and oh, it was so calming and peaceful, and I was able to really relax and get some peace and comfort. And so Molly and my mom asked me, they're like, did you guys get down on the floor and sit in the cool breeze? I'm like, no, we did not ever do that. And listen, I don't come from a hyper-charismatic background, just so you know. I like to consider myself charismatic with the seatbelt. So yes, for all the gifts, but with a little control. So I don't even talk about these things a lot, but I fully believe that was a very charismatic moment where God had just shown up and given him his tangible presence, this cool breeze, and some peace in that moment. And because he even talks about in Genesis that Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of the garden, right? The cool of the day. So I fully believe this is God's presence, right? God is with me. And my dad wasn't a Christian for years. Like in his 50s, finally, he had given his life to Christ. Just grew up hard, not interested in church. So he had done that. And so to respond like that and have that moment of, I sense this cool breeze. And he just kept saying, he's like, I just really want that cool breeze again as he was in trying to go through recovery and just dealing with all the pain and all the situation. And listen, we end up losing him to complications. But even in that storm, because God's presence was so tangible for him, he had a calm that was transcendent supernatural that I'd never seen, right? That God is with me. That maybe you're going through cancer or the divorce or job loss or the kids are wandering. And those valleys and those storms seek to steal our awe and our wonder, to make us feel their power and fear them, right? Look at how strong I am. You should panic, give up, lose heart, make some really terrible or hurtful or bad decision. And the way you resist that is you look to Jesus and you choose his presence over your fear. Because listen, you can't always out-argue the cancer or the divorce or the wayward child. You can't always outwit or outdo the circumstance, but we can look to Jesus. Here's what the psalmist writes in Psalm 46:10. He says there, "Be still and know that I am God." Right, right? Sometimes you have to remind yourself you have his presence, and I'm going to lean into that next week, so come back for that. "Be still and know that I am God." The Message version says this: "Step out of the traffic, take a long, loving look at me, your high God," right? Sometimes you have to take a long look and you have to get out of the traffic to do that, which again is why you should go listen to Grant's message last week if you missed it. Don't knee jerk, don't panic, don't get paralyzed and locked down. Jesus is with us in the good and he's with us in the bad. Right, and all those things, the cancer, the divorce, the depression, the abandonment, the abuse, the job loss, sometimes they can feel so powerful because they make you feel like there's no hope for tomorrow or the next day or the future. But listen, they're not more powerful than Jesus, and they're not more awesome and wonderful than God. And Jesus doesn't fear the storm because he doesn't fear the things he created. And Jesus doesn't fear sin and death or your addiction or our despair because he conquered those things on the cross. So like, I don't know for sure when our storms, when your storms will end. If they'll linger, if they'll go away soon, if they'll be seismic, huge, if they'll be insignificant, I don't know. The point of this story is you and the psalm, you're not alone. You are never, ever alone. That God in the form of Jesus is with us himself. And faith is not having confidence that you're never going through a hard season, that you're never getting a storm or a dark valley. Faith is having confidence that no matter what storm or what valley you go through, the God of the universe is right there with you in the middle of it. And his presence and his protection will bring you through it. So here's what we're gonna do now. And if you're a guest and you would like to know more about this Jesus or is this real, that's awesome, man. If you've got questions or you're not even close to believing that, we'd still love to chat with you. You can come find me out in the lobby. I'll be hanging out soon. But for the rest of us, we're going to take communion now. And the host, you guys can go ahead and head back and grab the plates and get those set up. As they're heading back, as we take communion, and we always remember Jesus' body broken and blood shed on our behalf to die for our sins and invite us to be with him for eternity, new life, new creation. But I also want you to pray. Maybe you're in the room and you've got some things, right? And you're feeling stressed and angst and panic about how am I going to do this, start over, get through the news we got from the doctor, whatever. And I just want you to take a moment to say, God is with me, right? I'm not going to fear. I need to get a game plan. I may need to get some help, some counseling, some strategy, whatever, but I'm not going to fear and get put on lockdown and become paralyzed by that thing. I'm going to trust God. We're going to get through it. There's going to be a greater calm on the other side. I love our worship song. In the valley, in the darkness, in the brokenness, God's with us. He is there. And his goodness and his mercy will not fail.